The fairies assembled one moonlit night in a pretty clearing of the ancient forests of Burzy. The clearing was in the form of a circle, and all around stood giant oak and fir trees, while in the center, the grass grew green and soft as velvet. If any mortal had ever penetrated so far into the great forest and could have looked upon the fairy circle by daylight, he might perhaps have seen a tiny path worn in the grass by the feet of the dancing elves. For here, during the full of the moon, the famous fairy band, ruled by good Queen Lulia, loved to dance and make merry while the silvery rays flooded the clearing and caused their gauzy wings to sparkle with every color of the rainbow. On this especial night, however, they were not dancing, for the queen had seated herself upon a little green mound, and while her band clustered about her, she began to address the fairies in a tone of discontent. "I'm tired of dancing, my dears," said she. "Every evening, since the moon grew big and round, we've come here to frisk about and laugh and disport ourselves. And although those are good things to keep the heart light, one may grow weary even of merrymaking. So I ask you to suggest some new way to divert both me and yourselves during this night." "That is a hard task," answered one pretty sprite, opening and folding her wings slowly, as a lady toys with her fan. "We have lived through so many ages that we long ago exhausted everything that might be considered a novelty, and of all the recreations, nothing gives us such continued pleasure as dancing." "But I don't care to dance tonight," replied Lulia with a little frown. "Oh, we might create something by virtue of our fairy powers," suggested one who reclined at the feet of the queen. "Ah, that is just the idea," exclaimed the dainty Lulia with brightening countenance. "Let's create something. But what?"
"I have heard," remarked another member of the band, "of a thinking cap having been made by some fairies in America. And whatever mortal wore this thinking cap was able to conceive the most noble and beautiful thoughts." "That was indeed a worthy creation," cried the little queen. "What became of the cap?"
"The man who received it was so afraid someone else would get it and be able to think the same exquisite thoughts as himself that he hid it safely away. Oh, so safely that he himself never could think afterward where he placed it."
"How unfortunate! But we must not make another thinking cap, lest it meet a like fate. Can't you suggest something else?"
"Well, I've heard," said another, "of certain fairies who created a pair of enchanted boots, which would always carry the mortal wearer away from danger and never into it."
"What a great boon to those blundering mortals!" cried the queen. "Whatever became of the boots?"
"They came at last into the possession of a great general who did not know their powers, so he wore them into battle one day and immediately ran away, followed by all his men, and the fight was won by the enemy."
"Oh, but did not the general escape danger?"
"Oh, yes, at the expense of his reputation. So he retired to a farm and wore out the boots, tramping up and down a country road and trying to decide why he had suddenly become such a coward. The boots were worn by the wrong man, surely," said the queen. "And that is why they proved a curse rather than a blessing. But we want no enchanted boots. Think of something else."
"I suppose we weave a magic cloak," proposed Espa, a sweet little fairy who had not spoken before.
"A cloak? Indeed, we might easily weave that," returned the queen. "But what sort of magic powers must it possess?"
"I'll let its wearer have any wish instantly fulfilled," said Espa brightly.
"But add this,
But there arose quite a murmur of protest on all sides, which the queen immediately silenced with a wave of her royal hand. Our sister did not think of the probable consequences of what she suggested, declared Lulia, smiling into the downcast face of little Espa, who seemed to feel rebuked by the disapproval of the others. An instant reflection would enable her to see that such power would give the cloak's mortal wearer as many privileges as we ourselves possess. And I suppose you intended the magic cloak for a mortal wearer? She inquired. Yes, answered Espa shyly. That was my intention. But the idea is good nevertheless, continued the queen, and I propose we devote this evening to weaving the magic cloak. Only its magic shall give to its wearer the fulfillment of but one wish, and I'm quite sure that even that should prove a great boon to the helpless mortals. I suppose more than one person wears the cloak, one of the band said. Which then shall have the one wish fulfilled? The queen devoted a moment to thought and then replied, each possessor of the magic cloak may have one wish granted, provided the cloak is not stolen from its last wearer. In that case, the magic power will not be exercised on behalf of the thief. Should there not be a limit to the number of the cloak's wearers? Asked the fairy lying at the feet of the queen. I think not. If used properly, our gift will prove of great value to the mortals, and if we find it is misused, we can at any time take back the cloak and revoke its magic power. So now, if we all agree upon this noble amusement, let us set us to work. At these words, the fairies sprang up eagerly, and their queen, smiling upon them, waved her wand toward the center of the clearing. At once, a beautiful fairy loom appeared in the space. It was not such a loom as mortals use. It consisted of a large and a small ring of gold, supported by a tall pole of jasper. The entire band danced around it thrice, the fairies carrying in each hand a silver shuttle wound with glossy filaments, finer than the finest silk, and the threads on each shuttle appeared a different hue from those of all the other shuttles. At a sign from the queen, they one and all approached the golden loom and fastened an end of the thread in its warp. Next moment, they were gleefully dancing hither and thither, while the silver shuttles flew swiftly from hand to hand, and the gossamer-like web began to grow upon the loom. And presently, the queen herself took part in the sport, and the thread she wove into the fabric was the magical one which was destined to give the cloak its wondrous power. Long and swiftly, the fairy band worked beneath the old moon's rays, while their feet tripped gracefully over the grass. And their joyous laughter tinkled like silver bells and awoke the echoes of the grim forest surrounding them. And at last, they paused and threw themselves upon the green with little sighs of content, for the shuttles and loom had vanished, the work was complete, and Queen Lulia stood upon the mound holding in her hand the magic cloak.